Attention all passengers. The Uber ride for Mark and Jamal's romantic weekend will depart in 4 minutes from Platform 6. Your ride comes with a rolling countryside sunset view and a table seat ideal for playing footsie beneath. Thank you for booking your tickets on Uber.
Trains on Uber.
So a lot of women think they have a hormone problem, but what if the real issue starts right in the gut? Because when digestion breaks down, everything starts breaking down. The bloating, the anxiety, the exhaustion, the mood swings, the brain fog. And so many women are being told that this is just part of the aging process, or it's just their hormones, when their body is actually screaming for support. And so today we're talking about one of the biggest hidden problems women face in midlife, the gut hormone mood connection. Now, stabilizing digestion may completely change the way women feel physically, mentally, and emotionally. So Sonia Batai, MD and founder of Ojas Vida, is here. And Sonal combines modern medicine with Ayurveda to help women understand the deeper root causes behind fatigue, anxiety, hormonal symptoms, and chronic depletion, especially during midlife transitions. So her work focuses on restoring balance through digestion, nervous system regulation, and sustainable healing practices that support both the body and mind. And so Sonal, welcome back to the show. Such a big issue for women. I'm in midlife, not on hormones. I'm feeling all of this stuff. So today's going to be such a powerful conversation. This is for all the women out there that are confused with what's going on with their bodies.
Yeah, it's a pleasure to be here, Lisa, and thank you for inviting me back.
Yeah, it's so much fun. Midlife as a woman is not so much fun, I might say, but this episode may help us make it more fun when we understand what's going on with our bodies. So in this big picture, a lot of women in their 40s and 50s suddenly start feeling like their body is essentially turned against them. So there's bloating, anxiety, exhaustion, digestion issues, mood changes. Can you tell everyone what is actually happening?
Yeah. I mean, this is one of the most common things I hear about from women in midlife. And let me first define midlife. Midlife isn't you hit the 50 mark. Let's be real. Midlife is earlier. It's happening in the 40s. And perimenopause is when this all starts. Traditionally, on average, perimenopause lasts about 10 years. So women can actually be in perimenopause for 10 years before they hit menopause, which by definition is not having a period for a full year. So that gives you an idea of how long this journey is. And one of the most common things that women describe is, I don't feel like myself. That's it. I just don't feel like myself. They'll describe poor digestion, their bloating, mood swings, mind fog. I'm tired, but I'm wired at night. I'm waking up at 2 a.m. These are all separate issues that they're discussed. But what's often not noticed is that they're all deeply connected. And they're deeply connected in the gut. And you're going to be like, whoa, 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 what do you mean? Why is this in the gut? But when you look at Ayurveda, which is a 5,000-year-old Eastern science that originated in India, and you look at where modern medicine is going and how much research has been done, both of them intersect and they both agree that the gut is the primary area where women start to have these imbalances and nobody's actually talking about it. So if you're having trouble with sleep, you get prescribed something for sleep. If you have a mood issue, if you have anxiety, if you have depression, you get treated separately, often by a different doctor. If you're having some issues with digestion or you're bloating or you're constipated, you have a gastroenterologist or a GI doc prescribing you something. All these symptoms are working with different physicians treating those symptomologies only. But the body doesn't work that way. Our body is a system and it works as a coordinated system. So when you think about midlife in the perimenopause and the menopause phase, the gut is the central player of all of these. And this is the area where we can understand how we feel emotionally and how we feel physically.
So if digestion is off, then our hormones and our mood will be too. Is that what you're saying?
Absolutely. So, you know, I don't know if you've heard of this term. It's called estrobolome.
No, I didn't. I asked you how to pronounce it before we started the show. So no, tell us.
I'm sure many of our viewers and listeners haven't heard of the word, but estrobolum is a collection of gut bacteria that we all have. And that gut bacteria helps metabolize estrogen. Now, the gut bacteria is recycling the estrogen, whether it gets recycled back because it's doing its work, or if it's not working, it gets passed on to the liver and gets detoxed out of the body. So that is the role of these estrobolums, which are gut bacteria. If the gut is imbalanced, then the estrogen is imbalanced because the estrobolum bacteria is imbalanced. And when that happens, then how can the body not be in a state of bloating, of weight changes, of mood swings? All of these get impacted simply because the gut bacteria or the estrobolum is not at a regular, highly functional level. So your hormones are not just coming from your ovaries. Everyone thinks ovaries, that's where your estrogen comes from, your testosterone. Yes, that's true. They're all coming from the ovary, but they're being shaped in the gut. And that is why the gut is so critical in how we actually signal and manifest symptoms.
Right. And so what happens then hormonally when digestion slows down?
Yeah. So you see, a lot of women in midlife, they have bloating. They may have reflux, which is also another very common symptom. They could have constipation. And these are all early signs of some imbalance in your gut. But women are normalizing these symptoms. And this is where we need to stop because we cannot just say, I have something that's wrong, but this is midlife, so I have to suffer, right? These are early signals, and they tend to happen in the early perimenopause phase. And they only worsen over time. But women get that early whisper, and they know, we know, when something's off, and we've known it for a while. We just don't know the what. When these hormones are out of balance, when your gut is inflamed, it leads to increased sensitivity to anything that's being put in the gut. It leads to a lot of inflammation. It leads to slower motility or movement of your gut in midlife. And, you know, there's a fact that I'd love to share with everyone. About 90% of serotonin receptors are actually in the gut. We
Right.
think that serotonin, our happy hormone, is in our mind, but 90% of them are in the gut. So if your gut is inflamed because of food and other things, then your mood is going to be affected and you're going to have mood changes. And the mood swings that happen are because your gut inflammation is not at a static. It changes one day, it's different the other day, and it all depends on what and how you're eating. If your microbiome is imbalanced, then you're going to have anxiety, and it shows up as anxiety, even though it's your microbiome. It's not just stress. We all say, oh, well, I have stress. Absolutely. High levels of cortisol also impact your gut. But what feels like an emotional issue and what we reach out to a doctor for tends to often be a physiological one, and it's back to the gut. And, you know, Ayurveda has been speaking about this for years. I mean, thousands and thousands of years. People who practice it in the East, they understand this quite well, that everything in Ayurveda starts in our digestive fire, or something that we call Agni, Agni. That is your powerhouse, your digestive fire. If it's weakened, you're going to feel heavy, you're going to feel foggy in your mind, you're going to be imbalanced. But if it's strong, imagine a fire that is warming up a fire pit when you're in the cold weather. That heat gives you clarity, it gives you energy, and it gives you stability in your mood. So as we enter into midlife, that digestive fire or Agni naturally becomes a lot more sensitive to everything that we're putting in our body. And so what we could do in our 30s, we're starting to realize in the 40s, may not, I'm not feeling so great about what I was able to do. By your 50s, you absolutely cannot do it. Like you actually say,
Right.
no, is not working for me. So this is where we start to realize that importance of the digestive fire and its impact on our body. When your digestion is not optimal, then what we do is we create something called ama, A-M-A. And ama is just a Sanskrit word for toxins. So what are toxins? Undigested residues from all the food we're eating. So if you eat a meal, but the digestion hasn't happened, all of those toxins stay in the gut and they permeate through your body because they can get eliminated. And that's okay if it happens one meal out of 10, but it's not okay if it happens every meal for the next year, because that is all that accumulated toxin creates, that heaviness. And that's what impacts your digestion. And all the toxins lead to all the inflammation that we're seeing. Inflammation is the number one problem that we are experiencing in midlife. It leads to all the other symptoms. So modern medicine calls it inflammation. Ayurveda calls it ama, toxin. Same thing, same parallel concept. This is where they meet. And in perimenopause, because we have so many hormones fluctuating, your estrogen starting to go down. Estrogen protects your heart. It protects all of your vasculature. It's starting to go down. Your stress has gone up. If you think about our life, we have more responsibility with families, with our career, with our aging parents, as caregivers. There's a lot more stress load on the woman, and often years and years of accumulated habits that we could get away with in our 30s now catch up. So irregular eating, cold foods, eating on the go, skipping meals, all of this starts to be highly impactful because we've done it for so long that the body, the system is much less forgiving as we go into perimenopause.
So I have a question then. The food that we used to eat in our 30s, can we completely reject all of that? Could our body be asking for something completely different? Because sometimes I feel like I am eating the right things and I eat very little sugar and processed foods, but I'm still not feeling great. Could that be a sensitivity to certain foods, or how do we go about navigating this change in the way our bodies are reacting to food?
Yeah. You know, what's fascinating about both modern science and Ayurveda is that they're pointing to the exact same thing, that if your digestion is off, everything else is following. So mood swings, the mental fog, the anxiety, all of this is no longer psychological. So, okay, then how do we fix the bad habits? And how do we actually challenge the good habits that we have? And a lot of the work I do now is really helping women and also men understand that what they thought is healthy may not exactly be healthy, and the why behind it. And I'll give you an example. Warm cooked foods are so nourishing to the body because our body is warm. So when you add warm cooked meal, it is going to metabolize and digest seamlessly. When you add a cold, let's say you add a cold smoothie or a cold raw salad, now your body has to work extra to warm up the food because the food entered cold. Now you're going to have to warm up the body, warm up the food to be able to digest that. And then because there's raw vegetables in there, it takes even more from the body to be able to digest. That, especially when you wake up in the morning, having something warm is so important. And I know a lot of people love yogurt in the morning, and I often
Or their green smoothie.
Green
smoothie is so popular. Like, I see everywhere, like protein powder and smoothie. That is being advertised everywhere.
It's being
advertised because it's quick.
Because it's quick and it's got all the nutrients that you want. But the problem that we have in the Western society, right across the entire panel, Canada, US, we are using iced drinks. When you go to other parts of the world, nobody serves an iced drink. In fact, when you're in Europe, we ask, can you add ice to my water or to my drink? And that's not a norm. It's the same in Latin America. It's the same in the Far East. And why? And the reason being is the moment you put a cold iced drink into your body, you are shutting down the digestive fire engine. You are pretty much, it's like you're trying to make s'mores on a hot summer day and you've got your fire going to make the s'mores. and then you add water to the fire, and then you try s'mores. Are you going to be able to do anything? Absolutely not. The s'mores are not going to get to the point that you want because the fire got shut down. It's the exact same concept with our gut. The moment we put cold water, we have shut down the ability for the digestive enzymes to function. We've pretty much signaled to our body, don't even bother with digestion. And then we have any meal, whether it's warm or cold at that point, we've already shut down the enzymes from working. So I would say, if you're going to have your cold smoothie or the yogurt, don't make it out of the fridge. Keep it on your counter for a bit. Let it get a little warmer and then add it. That's a gentler way to introduce it into your body. The other thing that's very important for women in this phase of life is regular and consistent timing of food. We tend to eat depending on what's going on in our world, right? Where if you're busy all day, suddenly you've skipped lunch. It's okay. I'm going to have an early dinner, and it becomes a massive dinner. But and at this time really craves consistency. And consistency means having your breakfast around the same time. It doesn't have to be exact. If you're having breakfast between 8 and 10, fine. If you're having lunch between 12 and 2, great. And if you're having dinner between 5 and 7 or 7 to 9, whatever that is, consistency is key for the body to feel safe and to know that there's another meal coming. Because when they know that, when your body knows it, it is not going to start storing nutrients. But when you skip a meal, then the body is informed that there's no food coming. And that scarcity mindset for the body puts it into a reactive state of, hey guys, we need to store everything we need because we don't know when the next meal is. And that is what leads the fluctuation in the hormones. It leads to the fluctuation in body weight, and it leads to inflammation in the body because the body is not feeling safe. So that is why I always recommend regular meal timings. It doesn't have to be big or small. It's the important thing is to make sure you're eating at those times. So the first thing I talked about is warm cooked meals. The second is regular meal timings. The third thing I'm going to recommend is slowing down when eating. So how many times have we been eating a meal while watching a show or working on something, and then you're like, wait, did I finish eating? Wait, yes, my plate's empty. Don't even realize.
I ate out of a pot this afternoon while I was in the middle of working. So yeah, totally guilty of that one.
Or I'm having my coffee, but oh, I didn't realize that I had my coffee. Now I'm going to go get another coffee because I didn't realize that I had the coffee. The digestion system actually starts in the nervous system. And so if you're rushed, the body is not going to process that meal. It's slowing down the digestion, even when you're eating it in a rushed fashion, because it's not expecting that. It doesn't have that calm state that the body requires to process and digest. So it's very important to sit down, eat your meal, only eat your meal, not to multitask. When you finish the meal, then you can move on to your next task. So that's number three. And the last one I'm going to give you is reducing overload. So we are in a Western society of food being everywhere, and there's a lot of input. There's coffee, there's mid-morning snacks, there's lunch, there's mid-afternoon snacks, there's dinner, there's after-dinner snacks, there's I'm working late, I need a snack because I'm hungry. We're grazing all the time. And the problem with that, especially for women, is that you're not giving your body a break from the digestive system in order to process the other systems. Our body is made up of numerous systems, but if we spend the whole day just digesting, then the digestion is not efficient. We never tell the body when it stops, and we are actually avoiding other very critical processes in the human body. And one of them is sleep, because between 10 p.m. and 2 a.m., every body is undergoing cellular repair, only if your melatonin is high and you're sleeping, because melatonin rising tells your body that you're sleepy and you feel sleepy and you go to sleep. That triggers other hormones to start the cellular repair. And the body is a beautiful system of eliminating all our toxins during the data that we accumulate them through food, we accumulate them through the media we're seeing, we accumulate them through conversations, all those, and the environment, of course. And we need to eliminate.
And the water we're drinking, for sure. Yeah.
Exactly. Everything around us right now, there's a high level of toxicity. But when we are pushing our sleep to 1 or 2 in the morning, that cellular repair stops. It doesn't delay to 2 to 6. No. Just because you moved your sleep doesn't mean the process moved. The process only happens at that beautiful time when the body is meant to be in rest mode. And it waits till the next day. So during that 24 hours, you are adding more toxins to your body and accumulating more. All of that is leading to inflammation. And over 10 years, inflammation can lead to cancer. It takes 10 years for cancer to surface as actual cancer, but it starts at inflammation. So it is so important to not skip our sleep and to reduce the overload of the digestive system working.
I heard like a few things. So a few things I want to clarify with you, because there's a lot of trends right now. One of those trends is fasting. And another one of those trends is the cold plunge. I've heard that it's really bad for women. And I've also heard that it's good for women. And then the third thing is that I've heard that there are different types of people who thrive in different schedules. And some people are night people and some people are morning people. And so the night people will go to bed later and wake up later, and vice versa. And so can you speak, I guess, to all of those?
Yeah. So these are all really, really good questions. According to Ayurveda, everybody has a different constitution, and we're all made of elements, air, water, earth, space. All of these elements make up each constitution, and they're different elements. I may have more fire, you may have more water, someone else may have more air. That constitution says a lot about how you metabolize, how you digest, how you sleep, how you show up with anxiety or not. All of these elements, all of our processes are governed by that particular constitution. So once I have a client and I have mapped out their particular constitution, I can tell them what they're doing that is pushing them into imbalance. And so, for example, someone like me, and my primary constitution is fire, but I am in an airy part of my world. There's an age frame during which a certain element rises to the top as well. So you have to maintain that consideration as you're assessing the clients. So someone with fire like me and air is not going to like a cold plunge. It's not for me. It'll shut me down. It's like me walking in rain under a cloudy sky. It impacts my mood. It impacts everything. Well aware of it now, because I have studied not only Ayurveda, but I studied myself through the process, which is why cold plunges are not for everyone. There are those who absolutely will thrive in something like this, and it works for their constitution. So that the other thing is intermittent fasting. So everybody talks about intermittent fasting, and I do believe fasting your body is very important. Now, the question is, do you do 16-8, or is a 10-hour fast sufficient for you? All depends also on how much you're doing body. So if you're someone who, let's say you finish your dinner by 7 p.m. and you're done for the night, and next morning you woke up, you went for a walk, and you worked out, and it's now 9 a.m. or 8 a.m. That is like 12, 13 hours. Should you wait 3 hours before you give your body some protein and a warm meal? Absolutely not. Because your body is working. You're eating protein. And if you're eating lean proteins, then you're building muscle. And for that, you need nutrients. If you're someone finished eating at 7 p.m. and you're waking up and you're just, you know, taking a chill morning, having a cup of coffee, which is allowed during an intermittent fasting, as long as you're not putting sugar in it and milk, and you're journaling and meditating, you can probably go a couple more hours. And those hours are cellular repair. By the time your digestion stops, which takes a few hours into intermittent fasting, you're starting cellular repair. Having said that, you may have thyroid disease. intermittent fasting is not good for you. You need stability of hormones. You need stability of food. You need your body to feel comfortable. So intermittent fasting is really not for everyone. And that's why you really need to understand what your body is, what are your elements that are governing your metabolism and all of your other functions, and then what can you do with that? So we talked about intermittent fasting, cold plunges. What was the third one?
The sleep schedule. So I heard that some people are just more functional in the morning and some people are just more functional at night. And so it is normal for some people to sleep later and go to bed later.
Yeah. I have actually switched people who thought they were night owls to switch their circadian rhythm so that they're waking early and sleeping early. And we're as humans, we're connected to the circadian rhythm. When it's sunny, we're going to be really efficient at doing work. When it's dark at night, we should be sleeping and cellular repair needs to happen then. There's data that shows that people who have to do night shifts often are at higher risks of heart attack and stroke. So yes, you can adjust your body to whatever you want. If you want to wake up and be up at night, yes, you can work and you're going to do meaningful work, but it's going to come at a cost to your health. And that is why we have to be very aligned with our circadian rhythm and be as closely as possible within it, given that many people can't do it because of their job and their expectations or their night shift people. So yeah, every human's different.
So is there anything that women in their midlife should absolutely avoid at all costs?
Say the number one thing that women should avoid is not listening to their intuition. Because often they think something's off, but they don't listen to it. And over time, those different symptoms start to carry other symptoms that are also now connected. And I would say there's a lot of things we did in our 30s. It's reset time. It's reset time to learn what your body really needs in this new era, in this new journey, and give ourselves that warmth, that nourishment, the cyclical nature of our bodies, the ability to feel what we're going through, and to realize that we're not broken. We're absolutely not broken. We're all in it together. Share what you're going through with somebody else, because we come from a generation that didn't talk about it. It was considered taboo. And now I love that we're all bringing it up to the forefront and educating each other and learning from each other, right? There's a lot of stuff in social media, but verify the facts as well.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, absolutely. What effect does alcohol have on the microbiome? And should women who are going through these changes in midlife avoid it?
Yeah. Alcohol is having a huge impact on the microbiome. It is destroying it, in essence. I would consider it poison. If you have to drink, have a half a glass or a glass. Don't have it every night. Spread it out by a few nights, because it's not just about the microbiome, but it's also the sugar content and the fact that the day you drink, that night you're waking up at 2 a.m. because your body is busy metabolizing the alcohol instead of undergoing cellular repair. So I want women to know, if you're drinking one night, you're pretty much telling your body, we're not doing cellular repair tonight. I'm enjoying my drink. You work on metabolizing it at 2 a.m. That is when your heart is racing. You wake up and your heart's racing because your sugar went up from the metabolism that needs to be brought down, and your body's working so hard. So that heart racing, that feeling that your heart is palpitating and you're feeling off and you can't sleep, that is alcohol in play. That is that 5 p.m. coffee that you decided to have, that maybe you could have just had an herbal tea and it would probably sit better in your gut. And definitely probiotics. There's so many natural ways to keep your gut healthy, and they become even more critical in this midlife journey we're in.
Do women also get more sensitive to caffeine as we get older?
Yes. And it takes, everybody's different, but an average of 12 to 13 hours to metabolize a cup of coffee. So if you think back, when should I have my last cup? You're probably in the early morning to early afternoon, late morning to early afternoon time, as when you should stop that cup of coffee or tea and then switch to something more herbal in nature. And, you know, even green tea has coffee. So you got to be caffeine. So you got to be careful because there you become highly sensitive to even caffeine. And when you know that, mm-hmm. those small, small changes, the impact is outstanding. You can finally have a good night's sleep and not wake up at 2 a.m.
Right. Yeah, I know a lot of women in their midlife, they get those evening cravings where they just want sugar and salt. And is that a sign of imbalance?
It is a sign of imbalance. And it's a sign of a meal not having the fiber and the protein that is required. When you have a balanced level of protein and fiber in your meal, and you reduce the amount of starch, especially at night, it allows your sugar levels to stay within range and not spike. What happens is if you have a pasta for dinner or a pizza slice, these are simple carbs that elevate your sugar level and they spike them. And then the spike leads to a drop because your insulin will come out and it's going to do its work. And then you have a drop even below. And the first thing you crave is the sugar. And then you have the sugar and the sugar is an overload. So then you crave the salt because you're trying to get back into balance. So the best way to avoid that is to eliminate the starches and your dinner, which is your last meal of the day, and make sure that you have a really good amount of fiber in your vegetables, as well as a good balanced amount of protein. Women need protein in midlife, in their three meals. Protein is very important because we're losing muscle mass and our hormones are out of balance, and the protein helps to not only keep us in balance, but also gives us satiety. We feel full and we feel we're not hunger pangs. But sugar, we're also very sensitive to sugar as we go through midlife. So a bite is a bite, but it's sugar. So if you're thinking about, should I just have a bite of that? I would say, well, maybe you don't want the bite of that and maybe have some nuts because that's going to give you the same satisfaction. Maybe not as a
chocolate. I'm curious. Yeah, leave the cake alone. I'm curious as to your thoughts on this. And so right now there is a debate. I mean, I'm midlife, so probably my social media is curated to this, but on hormone replacement therapy. And a lot of women are considering hormone replacement therapy because of the levels of estrogen dropping so rapidly being in midlife. With changes to our gut health and the way we're eating, could we stabilize our hormones and thus like reduce the symptoms of perimenopause? Or what are your thoughts on HRT?
Yeah, so HRT has gone through many years of a lot of research. There was an era when they said it's really not good for you. Now it is good for you, right? So there's two schools of thought on it that have sort of surfaced because we've advanced research. And that's the beauty of modern medicine. Having said that, a lot of our ancestors didn't take hormone replacement therapy. So I question, why is our generation now requiring it? And why is our estrogen levels dropping at the levels where we need the replacement? And the answer to that is exactly what you said. If we are not keeping our estrobiome healthy, and then our estrogen is not getting recycled appropriately, then our estrogen is not being efficient in its work. And it's not just estrogen, it's all the hormones that women have. So by keeping your gut healthy and doing the things that you can push off hormone replacement therapy until the point where you may or may not need it. And I think every woman is different in how she is handling her perimenopause and at what point she's going to need the hormone replacement. There are some who are not taking it and they're okay, but they're also being very, very cognizant about the changes that they need to make to their eating habits and their rhythms and how they're structuring their day and maintaining their stress levels. Even meditation, all of these calm down and reduce the inflammation in the gut, which ultimately keeps your estrogen at levels that avoid all of the symptoms that we're talking about. Now, I'm not saying we're eliminating symptoms. It's about how do we manage these symptoms and be very effective in allowing our gut to be as healthy as it can be to allow that. And then if you get to a point where you're like, I still want the hormone replacement, by all means, you are the right candidate for it. But I don't think it's for everybody. And I think we all have to recognize that every woman is going to be in a different journey on her need or no need for hormone replacement therapy.
Yeah, and I think it's important to note too that if someone is using it as like a band-aid per se, like they refuse to do the work. You know, if you're not sleeping right, if you're not eating healthy, if you're drinking in excess and, you know, doing all the wrong things, hormone replacement therapy isn't going to help. Like you still have to look after yourself. And so I just want that to be clear to people so they don't think that they can continue the lifestyle that they want to live, you know, and it can be really frustrating because we want balance in life. Like I like going out on the weekends sometimes, but I just know that now when I do that, going to take me a little bit longer to kind of bounce back. And that can be really defeating and really frustrating.
But you know what? We're all in it together. And I tell every woman friend that I have, like, hey, let's just remember what we could do in the past that now we're together not going to do. And we're going to have healthier ways of enjoying each other's company without going through that journey in isolation and wondering, is this just me? Why am I feeling so off? Because everyone is. And I love that you talked about the band-aid, because this is when we replace things, when we add medicines, when we add anything into our body, we're fixing the symptom for the time being. But we have to go back to the root cause. And that's what Ayurveda is all about. Where are you imbalanced? And how do you get back into balance? And then see if you need anything to supplement you. But these should be supplemental and not the first place that someone goes to and says, now I can continue to have my journey. Because if you continue the lifestyle, as you said, at some point, even the hormone replacement therapy is not going to be effective and you're still going to have the symptoms, then what's next? Because you never went back to understand what caused it in the first place.
Right, right. Well, thanks so much for this conversation. It's been so enlightening. I could talk to you about this forever, just because it's a real issue for so many women, and so many women are struggling. I'm seeing, especially in my city, more healthy activities. I'm seeing sober dance parties, women's groups, more community events around like meditation and anxiety. And it's just being talked about a lot more. So I love all these new healthy habits that are becoming popular or evenings with groups of women. Yeah, so it's really exciting that these things are coming out for us, that we can learn new habits. And it supports these going to bed early kind of things that we need to start doing when we're getting older. So if someone is listening and they feel like they've been struggling for a long time, where would you suggest they start?
Happy to offer my website, sanalbhatia.com. They can absolutely go there. There's a lot of free resources. There's also a free Ayurveda book where you can figure out what is your constitution. I do a deeper dive into that when I work with my clients, but they have access to that. I also have a course out there. It's a 14-day mind and body course. You do it online and it's just a few minutes a day and a reflection every day that teaches you different tools on how to get your body and your mind back into rhythm. And it's self-study, so they can do it on their own at their pace. And then they can reach out to me, DM me for more information and also a free consultation for all of our readers and viewers here.
Amazing. That's awesome. I think the work that you're doing is phenomenal and just so awesome. Every woman out there definitely needs this. My last question that came up when you were mentioning the constitutions is, does our constitution change throughout the seasons? Like, does our bodies change? And like, if I'm more fiery, say in the winter, may I be less fiery in the summer? Or are we pretty much even keel? How often should we get our constitutions checked?
That is an excellent question. So the constitution is what you are born with. It tells you who you are, and you are that person all the time. What matters seasonally is how the season impacts you. So, for example, I'm a fire person. So in the summer, when there's so much heat, I get overheated. If I'm going to eat spicy food, I'm going to manifest skin rashes. Right. So is an example. But in the winter, I can have those foods and it doesn't have an impact because I have enough heat in my body. Similarly, we go through different elemental changes as we're going through life. So in your 40s and 50s, there's more air. In your 30s and There's more heat, there's fire, there's this desire to do all the things like get a career, get a home, buy a car, have kids. All that shifts in our 40s and 50s. And so even though our constitution is the same, we are operating in a different era, whether it's seasonally of life or seasons of the environment. And we have to adjust accordingly, because if we eat the same thing and act the same way in every season, that's not balance anymore. So it's very important to be able to navigate those changes as well.
Yeah, agreed. Thank you for that. And do you have any last minute things you want to leave the audience with today?
Yeah, I just want to remind everyone that it is a beautiful era on Earth where we can be talking about this and finding meaningful ways of connecting without having to do the things we used to before. Because what I'm finding is a lot of women are finding new passions, things that they're inherently should have been doing for a long time, but weren't. And the reason that that is all coming online is because we're all talking and spending a lot of meaningful connection without the alcohol, without the bad habits. Things are coming up that are beautiful to witness. So I'm very excited about what women are doing and where the future is going for our future generation.
Agreed. Agreed. Well, thanks again, Sanaa, for being here and for your amazing work that you're doing.
Thank you, Lisa.
And thank you to our audience for tuning in. What I really loved about this conversation is that it gives women a completely different lens, because we tend to blame ourselves, but it's not our fault and we can do something about it. And so you can start listening to what your body is actually trying to communicate. And because there's so many symptoms that we normalize that are not random, they're absolutely signals that we should be paying attention to. And Sanaa and her work through Ojas Vida reminds us that healing often starts with the foundations, which are digestion, nervous system balance, and understanding the body instead of fighting it. So again, Sanaa, thank you so much for being here. And for everyone listening, if this episode resonated with you and you know someone who it could benefit, please send it to them. Send us a comment and we'll make sure to have Sanaa's website in the show notes so you can have access to her and her discovery call so you can learn more about yourself and your own constitution and thus start feeling better and healing your gut microbiome. Thanks again for tuning in, everyone. Bye for now.